This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Singer-songwriter Freddie Johnston has a new album called This Perfect World. His music has been showered with praise. A review in the New York Times said Johnston writes beautifully constructed pop songs. Johnston's previous album, Can You Fly, ended up on our rock critic Kent Tucker's Top 10 list, as well as on lists in the New York Times, Spin, and People. Critic Robert Christgau called it a perfect album, a study in bringing confusion under control and in loving your life as a beautiful mess. Last summer, we invited Johnston to talk with us from the NPR Bureau in New York, and to our surprise, he brought his guitar. But before he played, we started with one of his recordings. This is The Lucky One, featured on his album Can You Fly?
Walking from the bus stop, couldn't wait to get off. I know I am the lucky one. Walking through the twilight, cold Nevada twilight.
Johnston, welcome to Fresh Air.
Hi, Terry. Thanks for having me.
Who is this song about?
The Lucky One is, it's not about any one person. It was inspired by a trip I took to Las Vegas a couple years ago. Showed up about midnight or 1 a.m. on this hot summer night and saw all these guys walking to and from the downtown casinos. Just, you know, I don't know. I didn't expect to see that, these sort of walking dead zombies going from one slot machine bank to the next. And it was very sad.
Well, here's what I was wondering, that, you know, when you left your home and went to New York and hoped to make it as a songwriter, I bet a lot of people said to you, oh, no, only the lucky ones make it, and very few people make it. And you'll
well,
make
now
it.
That's a very interesting angle on that. I've never thought about that at all. But that's true. And I'm sure that I said that to myself many times.
That you know that, you'd be the lucky one?
No, that a lot of people make it, and that, and that you know, fat chance, kid. But I've never put that spin on that song.
You grew up in a small town named Kinsley, Kansas. Would you describe the town for us?
Well, it's a small town, about 2,500 people, out on the western Kansas prairie, There's not a lot going on there. There's one movie theater. At least last time I was there, there was a movie theater and a couple bars. But no real, I guess, I don't know. It's not the cultural center of the world or even of Kansas. So it was a little slow. I ended up driving around in my friend's car since I didn't drive. Driving around with my friends when I was an adolescent, just listening to tapes and causing trouble. That was my life there.
What kind of tapes and what kind of trouble?
I was. Next question. No, I listen to a lot of mid-70s heavy metal. To be honest, it doesn't completely come through in my music.
It sure doesn't
at all. But I'm still a pretty big Led Zeppelin fan and Aerosmith and Cheap Trick and all that stuff. Those are my roots. Terry, it seems to me, David Bowie. It was only later when I started listening to different kinds of music. And now I listen to everything.
How come you seem to be in the singer-songwriter tradition of rock, and your musical listening roots are in the heavy metal tradition?
Well, I've thought about that a bit, obviously, because it is pretty strange. I guess it comes from playing acoustic guitar. I bought an acoustic guitar when I was 16. I ordered it through UPS from some distributor on the East Coast because there wasn't a music store in town. But when I started playing acoustic guitar, I think, I don't know, you just end up writing folky type music because of the nature of the instrument.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't very well do heavy metal ballads on my acoustic guitar. So I think it comes from me playing acoustic guitar. It's the influence of the instrument more so than the music.
You have your guitar with you.
Yeah, I do.
Would you play us a chorus of something that was very important to you when you first started to play?
When I first started to play?
Yeah.
Well, I could completely humiliate myself and play you a bit of a joke song that I first wrote.
Please.
Do you really want to hear that?
Yes.
This is not a joke program, but when I was 18, there was a senior class talent show, and I wrote a song for that. It ended up being kind of a kid's song, but it was the first song I ever wrote. And it's called Sparky the Heroic Dog. Do you want to hear a little bit of that?
Absolutely.
Sparky the Heroic Dog, save my life one night when the house burned down. Sparky the Heroic Dog became a hero back in my hometown. Oh, Sparky. And there's a sad part. Do you want to hear that too?
Sure, sure.
Sparky, my dog, was so warm and soft and brought my pipe and slippers when I came home from work each night. You can tell I was just learning how to write songs. I had too many words in that line. He smelled when he was wet, but I loved Sparky yet. A primitive rhyme. Sparky. There you go.
What kind of reaction did you get at the talent contest?
It was uproarious because there were a lot of kids in the audience. So the kids loved it. But that was, I guess, I have no self-respect whatsoever. There it is. That's because I just did that on National Public Radio, Terry. But that's the first song I ever wrote. It's not really my roots or where I come from, but it is the first song I ever wrote.
Let me get back to something you were saying earlier. You said that you would drive around in friends' cars listening to tapes and getting into trouble. So now we should get to the trouble part.
Well, there wasn't a lot to do. You would basically kind of drive around in a circle from Main Street back up to the highway and then around. It was a circuit of town, and that's kind of what you would do for fun. It's a pretty limited, fairly limited options of what to do in Kinsley, Kansas when you're a kid. But I didn't cause that much trouble, I guess. I lived in a smaller town. It's too complicated of a story to get into, but I lived in a smaller town nearby for a time, and that's when I got into trouble. An even smaller town of 100 people.
Trouble for doing what?
Just, there's nothing to do there, and you turn into a vandal. So, I say one turns into a vandal. And
that's absolving yourself of responsibility.
Exactly. I don't know, just causing trouble. And, in retrospect, it's not completely, I wasn't a felon or anything. It was out of frustration or out of boredom is what it was.
My guest is singer-songwriter Freddie Johnston. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with singer-songwriter Freddie Johnston. Freddie, how did you get out of Kansas and go to New York?
How did I get out? Well, one dark night when the moon was down, I dug a hole under the fence and took a handkerchief with a pocket knife and some dried bread and ran for the border. But in reality, no, I actually took the bus from Lawrence, Kansas one day and came to New York City and moved in with a friend who had a spare couch and started, this is about in 85, 86, and started looking for a job and I guess starting over.
How did you try to get people to hear your songs in New York? I'm assuming that you already had the idea that you wanted to record.
Well, I was fairly unambitious, I guess. It took me a long time to play my songs for anyone. And even after that, I didn't actively promote myself or try to get a band together. When I look back, I wish I had done that. That's the way to go. It didn't happen that way for me. But that's a reason why, perhaps about why it took me so long.
So
I'm now 32, and I guess I've been writing songs for about 10 years, so it's taken me a while But when I came here, I didn't get a band together. I just worked with my four track in my apartment, and it took the intervention of friends to get me to do it, to distribute a tape and things like that.
Did you try to perform in clubs?
I only performed here after I had a record deal with Barn End Records.
That's odd, because it's usually the other way around. You perform clubs, you know, where you live, and try to get some other gigs nearby, and then finally somebody hears you and you get a record. But you usually have a lot of performing under your belt by the time you've recorded.
You usually do. I went about it completely backwards. I'm lucky that I was able to get up on stage and wasn't afraid to make a fool of myself or be a ham. So I didn't have a lot of trouble. I had done half a dozen gigs or so before The Trouble Tree came out, my first record. So I wasn't a seasoned road dog at all, but I was able to play. I was able to bring it across.
How did you get a tape to the record company Bar None that first signed you?
I actually didn't do it. It was a friend of mine, a writer friend named Michael Azarad. He heard a tape, actually through his wife, who worked with my cousin at the New Yorker magazine. It's a long story, but she had a tape and gave it to him, and then he liked it and began distributing it. And one day, Barnum called me up, and the rest is the rest.
So if somebody hadn't taken action on your behalf, maybe nothing would have happened.
I don't know if it would have happened at that rate. No, I fully admit that. I was not promoting myself.
For someone who's been pretty unambitious and not at all into, you know, selling himself, especially, you know, when you were first getting started, you did something that I think really indicates a great kind of belief in your music. And what I'm thinking of is when you sold the family farm to raise money to finish production on your first album.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what happened.
I don't like to admit it, even though I end up talking about it all the time. I don't like to really use it as a promotional tool, that topic, because it still bothers me that I had to do that. It was the right decision. I don't regret it, but it was a difficult one. It was inherited farmland, inherited from my grandfather, and it was my only real asset at the time of making the album, and we ran out of cash. The record company ran out of cash, and yet the record had to be finished. So I liquidated the land, and the gamble paid off. But I guess getting back to the lucky one there, the gamble paid off. Had it not paid off, I don't know where I would be. I don't know where I'd... it's not that I don't know where I'd be, but I don't know how I'd be feeling right now. I would probably be very depressed if I had sold that precious land and then the record had been panned or slagged or ignored or not even come out. So I rolled the dice and won, and I'm not really a gambling person. I when I went to Las Vegas, I gambled $1.50. So it's not in my nature to do that. Someday, I have a dream of buying back the land. Mm-hmm. I know the man who bought it fairly well, so that is a possibility. The problem with selling the land mainly was that it contained a house that I had lived in the first house I lived in. So I didn't want to sell that. At the very least, I could buy back the house someday to make up for it. That would actually be a fitting conclusion to the story, selling the land and then being that enabling me to eventually buy it back. But that's the story. And the first song on the album kind of is about that.
Yeah, why don't we play that? The song is called Trying to Tell You I Don't Know. And do you want to say something about when you wrote this and how you wrote it?
Well, it was written, it was one of the last songs when we were making the album. It was one of the last songs that I finished. It was an angry song, and I hadn't intended it to be part of the record, but it ended up making it. And it's ironic that it's a song about the making of the record.
Why don't we hear it?
I'm
tell you I don't know, Freddie Johnston. And it's from his album, Can You Fly? How did the rest of your family react when you sold the farm?
It was kind of a secret for a while. I was ashamed. It was my decision. It was my brother and I jointly owned the land. So it was our decision. But I didn't want to talk about it. I still haven't really, I honestly haven't spoken to my mother about it directly. It's a known topic, but I've kept it to myself. I just don't like to talk about it to them, because I think that if my grandfather would have been alive, or my father had been alive to see me commit that act, it would have just been unbelievable to them. The height of folly to sell this thing that you can see and measure and use and that is producing a yearly income from a wheat crop, this real estate, to sell that to finish making a rock record that maybe or maybe not is gonna maybe do something, possibly, perhaps. they wouldn't have been able to believe it.
Can I ask you about your name, Freddy? That's a nickname?
It's a nickname, actually. It's I streamlined the story that my mother gave it to me. It's actually a friend of my mother's named Leela, gave me the name years ago when I was about, I don't know, 14 or 15. It was a mispronunciation of Freddy. And my mother made the name happen. She just, she wouldn't let it go. She called me Freddy all the time because she thought it was so hilarious. And she still calls me Freddy. She calls me Freed, actually.
There was a bar in the place you grew up called the Trouble Tree.
The Trouble Tree, yeah.
Yeah, can you tell us about the bar and play a chorus of the song you wrote about it?
Really? Okay. The Trouble Tree, that was named by my mother as well, just like I was. It's closed now, sadly. It was called the Rain Tree Lounge, and it was a little bar downtown. It was actually, the Kansas alcohol laws have changed since, but it used to be that in order to sell hard liquor, you had to be a private club, and you had to be a member to go in there. Anyway, this was a private club, and it was on the weekend nights, all hell would break loose. I don't know why, but my mother renamed it from the Rain Tree to the Trouble Tree, and I wrote a little ditty about it, which I never played for my mother because I was so embarrassed, but she eventually heard it. Do you want to hear a little of that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Up in the Trouble Tree, drinking with Leela's ex. Up in the Trouble Tree, fighting with Mexicans. Never been to New York, got a brother in Galveston. Been to the Trouble Tree, up there more than once. I'm shaking like a leaf. He looks like a very bad fruit. He's rotten through with grief, falling out of the Trouble Tree. Not the best take there, but
I thought it sounded really good.
Okay, I've always worried about the line about fighting with Mexicans. I don't want that to be misinterpreted. That's just kind of what happened. A lot of farm workers from Mexico would come up, as far as Kansas, obviously, and they would be drinking on a weekend night, and there would be scuffles just all the time. It was kind of comical in a way, although I'm sure to be involved in them, it wasn't comical. And then the Leela's ex line, I might as well, since I'm on national radio, that was the woman, the Leela, who actually gave me my nickname, her ex-husband, put on the front of his pickup in big stick-on letters after he divorced her, Leela's ex. And so you'd always see that truck sitting down at the Trouble Tree. And, it's just too much.
Freddie Johnston recorded last summer. He has a new album called This Perfect World. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.